Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Tonight, first pitch just after 7 o'clock Central Time. Rays, Dodgers, Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. We've been to the old field just recently, next door.
Last year.
Yeah, last year when the Predators were taking on the Stars in the playoffs. We attended a game in which Mike Minor pitched a complete game. Was it a complete game shutout, Willie? Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, a complete game shutout in that.
Actually, I don't know if it was a shutout. I know it was a complete game.
He was really good. In fact, it was a fast game. We saw the Rangers last season. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, but to help us with tonight's Game 1 World Series, Kirk Casale, former Vanderbilt player, now Cincinnati Reds catcher. Of course, he went through the first leg of the playoffs. Tough losing to the Braves. Kurt, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. I want to get a catcher's perspective, and I'm going to have to open up another wound for Chase and go back to Sunday night. And I want you to take me through the catcher's eyes of the six. There were two critical plays in the sixth inning that involved home plate and the catcher. Let's start with what I think may have been, a backbreaker for Atlanta. Maybe, they squandered a golden opportunity. Second and third, nobody out, and a ball hit to the infield, and they come home and they get Dansby caught up in a rundown. It resulted in a double play. Kind of take us through that play. Let's start there.
Well, I think it was it had to have been a contact play. So a contact play is basically Dansby is, out on his front foot. So as soon as he sees a swing and contact, he's selling out to go to home plate. So, it works if the ball is, up the middle, maybe, in a hole that, the infielder's got to go a step or two to his right or left, and then, he doesn't have time to really get him at home. But the problem was it just didn't get through, so Dansby, like he should have done, gotten a rundown in order for Riley to get to third base. So then you have, if Markakis is even able to get to second base, that would have been awesome as well. But then you would have second and third with one out again. But yeah, the problem was, and I don't want to call out Riley, but he needed to get to third base immediately. That way they have a guy at third base with less than two outs, sack fly, a lot of different opportunities are still in play for him. But, kind of just a slight hesitation on his part, and it turned into a really, really bad double play, and, ended up killing a rally and honestly giving a lot of momentum to LA at that time.
Yeah, I guess we'll just chalk it up to young guy learning lesson in the league. He's still very, very young.
It's
at the beginning.
Play. It's
yeah,
play. He's a really good player. He's got a lot of pop. He's got a big, big and bright future ahead of him. But one of those times where hesitation, kind of killed a rally for him.
And in that same inning, runner third for the Dodgers. Ball comes up off the mound, so a fortuitous bounce for the second baseman. I think it was the second base for the Braves, and he fires it home. I thought Darno did a great job of blocking the plate. Just kind of take us through the mindset of you if you were in that spot on a play like that.
Travis did a really nice job. I think the ball was to Albies as well. He's a good defender. I think he made a great throw. And that's again an instance of going on contact. It's a high risk play and something that doesn't happen a lot. They must have been concerned that they weren't going to be able to get a fly ball in that situation. So you try and steal a run with a bang bang play, but Albies and Darno did a really nice job. I mean, it's not a real easy play at home play. I mean, you know he's not going to blow you up because of the rule change a couple years ago. So that's one thing. Darno's got the advantage because he has pads on. And it's one of those things where as soon as you get the ball, you can literally just lay in front of the plate.
Yeah.
And there's nothing the runner can do. I thought it was a really, really good slide, competitive slide by Muncy. But good defense prevailed in that. They made a perfect play, and he made a really nice tag as well on that.
So they finally have allowed some fans back in the stands. So how we haven't talked to you in a while. How strange and odd was it to play games in front of nobody and fake crowd noise and all that? What was that like going through this season?
It was different. But I don't think anybody could really predict what it was going to feel like. I think at first the crowd noise was, we were like, what the heck is this? Like, this seems forced. It's already weird. But then over the course of the 60-game season, it seemed like most stadiums, including our own, figured out a good formula for crowd noise. And you know, they just got better at timing when to increase the volume during big situations. And it actually helped. The difference was, you know, some stadiums were much louder than others. And it's kind of funny when we play at St. Louis, normally, you know, obviously it's very packed. They have one of the best support systems in baseball in terms of their crowd. But they're not that loud. They're a very respectful crowd, and, mm-hmm. and they know baseball, but their crowd noise was so much louder than any other stadium we played
really?
In. It was so weird. It's just like you can't hear yourself think, and that's just not something that happens in St. Louis generally. And, you know, vice versa, I thought Wrigley Field was not anywhere near loud, as loud as it was with fans. And so, you know, it was kind of a trial and error for a lot of whoever was running the crowd noise. It had been a really, really tough job. But the thing people, I tell people when they ask me, like, what was the big difference, all the lead up to the game. So, you know, all the same nerves, scouting reports, you know, the build up to when you walk out of the tunnel and take the field, that felt the exact same. It's just when you put on your uniform and spikes and you walk out into the dugout and take the field, it was kind of just like a letdown. It's like, oh, you have all this energy, all these nerves and anticipation for, you know, one of the best feelings in sports is taking the field in front of a packed house and, you know, getting applauded. And then it just like, it was all this build up and then nothing. And then, so we just kind of had to try and create it ourselves in the dugout. And, you know, in some ways it was a bonding experience for our team, but in a lot of ways, it was so different, and I hope we never, ever have to do that again.
I'm not surprised by that,
yeah.
That end right there. So maybe silly question, Kurt, but did you guys have to change things? Did teams have to change it? Did you have to change things because there were no distractions, because there was no loud noises, because it was a much, much more quiet environment? Did you have to change any approaches, pitcher, catcher, signs, anything? Did that change the way you went about normal business or no?
I think we had to adjust changing signs and just kind of disguising things that we were doing because there was nothing else to cover it up. You know, if a guy's on second base, I think it's much easier to, you know, let's just say steal signs, you know, what fingers I'm putting down and maybe relay. It's much easier to do that without any noise and distractions and things like that. So I felt like we were, you know, changing whatever our sign set was more frequently than what we would do in the past. If we were playing a team like the Chicago Cubs, for instance, they had one of the rowdiest benches we played all year, and it was a big advantage for them because they had a formula for, you know, creating energy, and it was bothersome because it kind of felt like, you know, high school, college-ish, and those are at the time when I'm in college and high school, like that was great. But then you get to, you know, big league baseball, it seems childish almost, but it kind of put momentum on their side right away. And it kind of got into our ears and, you know, ticked us off a little bit. So that can take us off of our game. So that's a definite way of, you know, putting the momentum in your side. But I would have to set up a little bit later because I was a little bit paranoid that they might have been relaying to the hitter where I was in relation to the plate, if I was inside or outside. And it was interesting to see just what normally gets drowned out by noise and what comes about when there is no noise. Just any type of smack talk you heard. Any time that we were yelling at an umpire, you know, individually, they heard us, and then they stopped play and just yapped right back at us. We had so many interactions with the umpires this year; it was ridiculous. Like they just felt no remorse for just coming, like literally walking towards our dugout and just being like, "Hey, shut the you know what up." We're just sitting there. We're just like, "Oh man, like he can actually hear me. I can't verbally accost this guy like I normally would to get out some frustration." So, you know, little things like that. But, we miss the fans.
Oh, that's good. Kurt Casale is with us, Cincinnati Reds catcher, giving us some insights with the World Series starting tonight, Rays and Dodgers. And, Kurt, it's been a few years, but you spent quite a bit of time with the Rays organization. And maybe you could give us a little insight on how they do it down there. It's such a different way of doing things, and it's worked so well for them the last few years. They've had a pretty good run of success despite some disadvantages that are pretty obvious.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I saw something on Twitter the other day that it was like with the prorated payroll that I think Clayton Kershaw and Mookie Betts combined were making more than the entire Rays roster. So,
and yet the Rays, it's not like the Rays snuck in as the eighth seed, right? They're the number one seed.
No. So that's their challenge right off the bat. The Dodgers obviously have a stacked roster and a roster full of names that people know. The way that Tampa does it is differently, and it's kind of ironic because the now president of operations or baseball for the Dodgers, Andrew Friedman, was the guy who basically created the formula in Tampa. So they got a lot of guys that people don't really know, but these are players, man. I really enjoyed my time in Tampa, but the thing that Tampa has that is far and away above any other team is their pitching staff. It's not necessarily their starters are better than you, their bullpen's better than you. They're just unbelievable pitchers, and they have such a great way of identifying what each guy is good at. And if you notice, they strike out a lot of guys, and they throw really, really hard. I don't know why. Kyle Snyder is their pitching coach. I played for him, you know, many, many years, even in AAA with the Durham Bulls, and it's funny, a lot of those guys on the that I played with in Durham are now in the big leagues, which is just not a surprise at all. But Kyle was really good at getting the most out of the pitchers and, you know, getting their very best stuff and how it translates via, you know, pitch plotting. And, you know, if you guys ever see the, you know, the overlays videos on social media, those are really cool. I think that started with Tampa. Kind of just a way of doing things that, you know, a lot of teams are, you know, following suit now, but for whatever reason, Tampa just gets guys who just throw absolute fuel and strike a lot of people out. So the old saying is good pitching beats good hitting every day of the week. And I think that's what Tampa's going to try to do against LA.
Why? This is a really difficult question. I'm sure for anybody to answer, but why do you think Clayton Kershaw has not been the same pitcher in the postseason as he has been the entire rest of his career? It's just really amazing to watch, and the next chapter is tonight.
That is a really good question. I don't know if I have a great answer. I think with players like that, they create such a high expectation of themselves because they're so good in the regular season that people expect them to do things even better in the postseason. And that just, it's just not the case sometimes, you know. What do you value in the player? Do you write him off because he doesn't do well in the postseason, but there's no way in hell that the team could have gotten to the postseason without him? So there's just different things to think about. I mean, I actually think Kershaw had a pretty good year this year. I think most people expected him to keep declining, and you know, with age, you'd throw as hard, and you know, he's had back issues, but I thought he had a really, really good season this year, and is a big reason why the Dodgers are what they are. But I don't know if it's fair to just put all the blame on him if he doesn't perform in the playoffs. But he's the guy that, you know, helped you get to the number one seed, helped you get all the advantages that you have by being the number one seed in the playoffs. And I think they get lost sometimes with fans and, you know, people looking on the outside. Like, you can't really quantify what that I don't know him personally. I've never played with him, but I don't think you can really calculate how much of an impact he has on that team in relation to wins and losses and just say, you know, well, he never does it in the playoffs. So, you know, right, his value is diminished by that. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, but maybe this will be his year like it was a couple years ago for David Price. You know, you never know. Mm-hmm. You keep running him out there. I want to ask you about one other pitcher, too, because it's nothing to see a guy throwing 96, 97 these days, but what separates Walker Buehler from other guys that throw real hard and have the tools? He's made a breakthrough, and obviously he's going to be a really important guy in this series because – the number of guys that can go deep into a game these days are dwindling.
Yeah, it's true. And I hope Walker can go deep. And you know, he's obviously created a great name. He's one of the best pitchers in our game. And it helps that he's always, you know, talking about Vanderbilt baseball, which is always a plus. It's great to have him as an ambassador for our program on a huge national stage. But Walker's a great pitcher. He's got an incredible arm. He spins the ball at such an incredible rate with his fastball that he kind of defies gravity. That's the goal when you're, you know, recruiting or, you know, signing pitchers is, you know, do you throw hard, but do you throw hard with spin? And that's really, really hard to meet bat the ball in that situation. That's what he does. He gravity takes over. Even if you throw 100 miles an hour, it still drops a little bit. His stays about as true as any fastball in the game. And I think I can't imagine that his fastball gets hit very much. But I know he's been battling a blister. It seems like he's kind of turned the corner with that as well. But he's a good dude. He's an incredible competitor. And if anybody looks at the letters on his glove that he uses, it's an homage to Vanderbilt, FAH. I can't say it on air, but basically it means F all hitters. And that's something that Derek Johnson, the former pitching coach at Vandy, my current pitching coach in Cincinnati, that was his thing. And, you see him out there. He rocks the letters. He rocks the glove. He's got the vibe. But like, he's such a fierce competitor. There's just a lot of hate coming behind every baseball that he throws towards home plate, and I think that's his greatest asset.
We're talking to Kirk Casale, catcher for the Cincinnati Reds, and of course, former Vanderbilt Commodore as well. I don't know how much you can answer this question because you haven't played in the park yet, but when I've watched these playoff games from Globe Life Field in Texas, we've seen home runs, but I also feel like we've seen times where it looks like the ball is going and then it just kind of dies and falls into the outfielder's hands. Have you talked to anybody about how the ball carries or doesn't carry in that park, and what have you seen in watching on TV?
I talked to one person, Derek Dietrich, who played with the Rangers this year, and he said it's a deep park. I think he said that it was a distinct difference whether the roof was closed or open. If it was open, I think the ball flies a little bit more. And if it's closed, you know, vice versa, it doesn't. But it's kind of been, you know, 50-50, I think. Like, some games it's not traveling, some games it is. So I think that's a really, really cool way of playing the game. You know, you don't know what you're going to get. So if it's blowing out, you got to be able to hit homers. If it's not, you got to be able to hit singles and, you know, get rallies and things like that. So it kind of presents a unique opportunity for people to watch and see which team can adjust to that quicker. And just going off the top of my head, just watching the games, I'd say the Dodgers have a real advantage in that because they don't necessarily need to hit homers to score runs. And Tampa has hit homers to win games. And I'm not saying that they don't know how to, you know, create a rally and, you know, hit singles and string together a few base hits, but it'll truly be able to show who the best team is and who plays the best this series will win the World Series. So very, very odd that, you know, that they're playing in a neutral site in general, but it presents that unique opportunity to see which team is going to be able to adjust quicker, and that'll ultimately decide the series, I think.
You guys with the Reds made a tremendous run this year. I know it was a rough start, but we're able to obviously get to the playoffs and play against the Braves in the wild card round. But a big part of that was Trevor Bauer, Bauer power. What's it like playing with him and the energy that he brings to a club?
Trevor is the ultimate competitor. It was an absolute pleasure catching him and, you know, being his teammate. He gets a bad rap for being different, and I'm not on that. Like, be yourself at all times, and you know, we'll find a way to, you know, coincide with one another. He spins the ball at such an incredible rate. I was talking about Walker Buehler. I think, you know, throwing as hard as he does, Trevor can throw. You know, he's not really in the upper 90s. He can get there if he wants to, but Trevor led all of baseball in spin rate all year, whether it was his fastball and curveball. So, you know, if you got somebody who can spin it in both directions and he's the top person in that category, he's going to have a great year. And that's what he did. I fully expect him to win the Cy Young. And if and when he does that, that would be one of my greatest accomplishments in my career, because, you know, you don't get to catch a Cy Young pitcher very often. And that would make me incredibly proud. But Trevor was a big reason that we got to the playoffs. He works so hard. His routine is so insane. You guys wouldn't even believe it. And all the while he's doing, you know, preparing for, you know, pitching every 4 or 5 days, whatever it is. He's running a blog. He owns a couple media companies. This dude is doing so much to grow the game and give fans an inside look into his life, the Reds' life, and, you know, I think it's something that Major League Baseball should do a better job of and look at his formula of doing it to gain followers and gain traction, because the guy literally eats, sleeps, and breathes baseball, whether that's, you know, on the field or off the field. And, you know, then you get him trolling Major League Baseball. He wears a different set of cleats with a different theme each start, and he sells them, and then, you know, gives the proceeds to charity. The guy's a rock star, and I really, really hope somehow we can figure out a way of re-signing him. It'll be expensive, and we need to move some pieces around, I think, but I think it'll be money well spent.
If he wins, is he supposed to get you something?
I hope. I
mean, like, the quarterback gets the offensive line,
yes,
something.
Sure.
Yeah.
A watch.
I mean, we have. Yeah, it might be a watch. It might be something. I don't want to jinx it. You know, a present, a gift would be really nice. But just knowing that I helped a little bit in you know, the pursuit of winning, you know, the most coveted award in pitching would be a gift enough for me.
I think that's only fair.
I think he will. I think he'll get a nice bonus that he'll easily delve out to me and Tucker as well.
Last thing, real quick. So the odds makers, the handicappers have the Dodgers as a pretty prohibitive favorite in this World Series. Do you agree, or how do you see this playing out?
I think on paper they're probably. They've got to be favored. I think the lineup favors the Dodgers. I think the pitching heavily favors the Rays. I don't know about all the intangibles, but I think if I were a betting man, I'd bet Tampa. I would love to see. Not that I don't like the Dodgers. The Dodgers are fine. I've just got history with Tampa. I love that organization. I know a lot of the guys. The coaching staff over there is second to none. They know what they're doing, and I'm of the mind, and it worked, you know, for the majority of our year with Cincinnati. That, like I said before, good pitching always beats good hitting. I'll take the pitching.
I'm getting old, Kurt, so my memory isn't the best these days. But the reason I ask is I'm pretty sure that this time last year we had you on to preview the World Series, and I asked you how it was going to play out, that very same question. And I think you were pretty quick, with no hesitation, to say the Nationals. Willie, is my memory correct?
Yeah, I remember that.
Because
you were emphatic about the Nationals.
I think I said you ride the hot team. You ride the hot
yes.
team, and you take the team with the better pitching. And the Nationals had the better pitching. They had a much different formula. They had, you know, with Anibal Sanchez, they had four quality starters. But that was also with Opted. I think the World Series now has Opted. That's another thing that's huge for Tampa.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Because 7 days in a row, that was insane to watch.
That's brutal.
That was unbelievable. Literally, that was brutal to watch. I mean, it was exciting but brutal. Like, those pitchers had to have been so tired. So if you milk in the off days, that bullpen is going to be fresh with Tampa. I'm not going to say how many games it's going to take, but I'm taking Tampa.
Interesting.
Yeah, Kurt was in studio with us, Darren.
Yes, that's right. You did the first hour with us, or you did a whole hour with us, and I do remember you emphatically saying the Nationals, because I remember the rest of the series. I was like, Kurt's, I mean, he was adamant about the Nationals.
Yeah, because I think Willie was on the road with the Preds.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I'm taking Tampa.
Okay. Hey, always good to hear from you. Thanks for doing this, as always. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having us on, guys. I appreciate it. Anytime.
All right, that is Kurt Casale, Cincinnati Reds catcher, former Vanderbilt Commodore. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour. The Dolphins have come out and said, we've got some breaking news for you. We'll tell you about it on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.